Radio.
Look, he's in the studio. It's Dr. Sean Lang. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's nice to have clarity over your future, isn't it?
One's always pleased to have
I wouldn't mind a bit of that one of these days.
Yes, wouldn't we all?
Yeah, you haven't been eating any Christmas trees or anything, have you, as we heard at the 5 o'clock news?
Afraid not.
I think
no.
It was in Belgium. They'd had to impart advice to people not to eat their Christmas tree.
I sort of saw something about that and thought, well, only in Belgium.
Yeah, it's not something that I've ever thought of doing, really. No. Sort of just tucking into
with
it.
Mayonnaise, no doubt.
but anyway, so one would have expected a quieter week in the news, wouldn't one, really, at this
point? One might, although actually January has a sort of track record of sort of throwing quite big things at you.
Yeah, so domestically we've got sort of Elon Musk sort of wading around everywhere, haven't we, and using X as a bit of a personal megaphone. Do you think is he getting a bit of adrenaline at sort of feeling he's controlling all the politics in Europe now?
It is very strange that, I saw something where they've done an analysis of the sort of number of tweets. A, he seems to be tweeting, it would seem, on an average of every 6 minutes.
Wow.
he doesn't have enough to do. But also this remarkable attention to detail with our government, I suppose, since he's going to have a post in his own, I suppose, though not dealing with foreign affairs. Of course, the particular focus, there have been various sort of focuses that he's latched onto over the last few months, but the one at the moment, of course, has been with the Rochdale issue of grooming gangs, which was a few years ago, but has sort of come back. And, there's been this demand, which, of course, the Conservatives have been leading in the House of Commons as well, for a full public inquiry into that particular issue.
Do you think they really want it, or do you think they're just jumping on the Musk bandwagon?
Well, I have no direct line into Conservative Central Office, so all I will say is that obviously the government's line is that this is indeed jumping onto a bandwagon. The basis for that being, Oldham Council asked for a public inquiry. The government's response was a local inquiry on the basis that this is not quite as widespread an issue as one might have thought, from the headlines. Not only that, but of course there has just been a massive, very, very comprehensive public inquiry into the whole issue of child sex abuse, and particularly in relation to institutions or any sort of networking and this sort of thing. And so the government's line is, first of all, if there was a case for a public inquiry and the Conservatives are leading this case, what have they been doing for the last 17 years? Why didn't they institute a public inquiry into it? After all, they were in a position to do so. And secondly, that the really urgent thing, which has been emphasised also by the chair of the public inquiry that did happen into child sex abuse, is to implement the findings of that report, which are, a good 2 years old now, I think. And this is what the Education Bill, which was being debated yesterday in the House of Commons, was going to start doing by making... I mean, it was covering a huge range of things involved in schools, but it also made it an offence for people in professional positions like teachers and social workers and people not to report any sort of sign or suspicion of child abuse, which is one of the recommendations, of the CAS report.
Mm.
There is a certain amount of grandstanding, and it has to be said, that you play upon people's sort of feelings about the case, because it was a horrific case, absolutely appalling.
And
not only that, but there was a comprehensive and systematic failure on the part of various authorities, including schools and including police and social services. And a lot of that was indeed because there seems to have been a sort of fear of being accused of being racist, because this was overwhelmingly men of Pakistani origin targeting white working class girls. So it was one of those ones. You had all those sensitivities, no question about it. But that's not to say that a public inquiry will always be the right thing. Partly, I think, because people have a sort of basic faith in... They don't quite know what a public inquiry is, but it sounds good.
Yeah.
They're certainly not clear on the sort of differences between a statutory inquiry and public in various types, because there are various types of public inquiry. So it's a sort of knee-jerk thing. People think, well, it sounds like, there ought to be a public inquiry into that. Almost regardless of the fact that, there has been an inquiry the best thing to have a have it on a national scale. These are the issues that have been argued between the two parties.
Well, let's hope that these terrible things aren't repeated and that politics doesn't get in the way of that in the meantime. And as a sort of bit of a sideshow, I suppose, to all that this week, is it the end of the Musk-Farage love-it? then.
Well,
which is not a nice image, but
yes, I know. I've tried to get rid of that one. I'm not claiming any sort of great prophecy here, but these relationships always fall out.
Yeah. Don't meet your heroes,
yeah, that's, yeah. And all that sort of thing. Yeah. Yes, and I mean, we've seen these sort of groupings of political figures, as a sort of team, and then time and time again, they all sort of fall out. Think of Mrs. Thatcher and various of her ministers, all the people around Tony Blair. But actually, more specifically with Nigel Farage, at the time of the Brexit referendum, there's a big falling out between him and UKIP, as it then was, and the Brexit campaign led by Boris Johnson and Michael Gove, who wanted nothing to do with Nigel Farage, which might come as a surprise to people if they hadn't sort of realised it. So... this is a sort of falling out, clearly. What strikes me as most interesting is not so much the falling out, but the fact that it matters, what Elon Musk thinks. And he has sort of virtually elbowed his way, sort of gatecrashed his way into British politics over the last few weeks to a quite remarkable degree. So that, his feelings or his thoughts or his latest little bit of criminology or whatever is headline news over here, which is quite extraordinary.
And it won't have escaped your attention that Trump 2.0 is about to arrive, isn't it?
Yes.
I suspect we'll be hearing the word Trump quite a bit in the coming weeks.
Yes, I think
in your
will.
Feature. There's obviously plenty going on in the States at the moment, including the terrible situation in Los Angeles. I dare say there's a certain symbolism, really, in the fires reaching Hollywood Boulevard, which captivates the public imagination in an even more direct way.
There is indeed. And I wasn't the least surprised to read today that he's now using the fires as a way of attacking the governor of California, basically saying it's totally incompetent, as if the governor could simply stop fires from breaking out or spreading. And, of course, Joe Biden. That must make for quite interesting sort of personal relations, what have you, at Jimmy Carter's funeral today. But these big cataclysmic natural disasters, fires, or one thinks of Hurricane Katrina and various other hurricanes, actually, they do have a political knock-on effect, and this is quite common. And some of it is a sort of reaching out an anger at decisions taken beforehand or failure to help the victims quickly enough when it happens, this sort of thing. But at the same time, you can also be accused of sort of making political capital out of some other people's misery. So it's one of those ones you have to play carefully. And playing carefully is not a phrase I tend naturally to associate with President Trump.
And, he's already been on a certain hobby horses, hasn't he, prior to inauguration, and perhaps most notably the Panama and Greenland ones are his most eye-catching. We need your views on the Greenland situation, I think. That really is rather extraordinary. But I think we need to save it in reserve. We need to have a little bit of travel, and then you have to stick around. And we need to get your views on Greenland. It is 21 minutes to six. It is just coming up to 16 minutes to six on a Thursday evening. Gavin Richards sitting in for Steffi Callister tonight. We'll have your showbiz and entertainment news on the way fairly soon. But Dr. Sean Lang is with us at the moment. And we were just reflecting on Donald Trump, weren't we? And he's coming to power in a week. And he's basically said that he will invade Greenland to sort of take it. And if any other incoming American president said that, people would say, that's a bit scary, isn't it? But are people just saying, yeah, because it's Donald Trump, do you think?
No, I don't think they are. I think he's sort of enough of a maverick for this extraordinary situation. Not only him talking about this, but you've got the government of Denmark, you've got the government of Germany, you've got the government of France, and you've got the EU, all basically saying, keep your hands off, and hinting that if there were to be any military action, it would be resisted. This is an extraordinary situation, even if it's just a war of words, that, these are NATO partners, and they're talking about, military standoffs. And it sort of set me thinking, first of all, are there other examples of that sort of thing? Now, not NATO partners, but nevertheless part of the sort of all both allied with America was, of course, the Falklands War. The when Argentina actually did invade.
Yeah.
The situation's rather different there because Argentina has a long-standing claim to the Falklands and Britain as well. Whereas the United States has no historical claim to Greenland. Historically, it's it is Denmark. It goes back to Viking times. The Denmark, here's a little bit of trivia for which might win you a pub quiz one day. It's the very first very first part of the European, what was then the EEC, to pull out of it. It's the back in the 80s,
right,
I think.
Okay.
That's when I spotted. Remember spotting a little book of odd facts years ago, and I've used it a few times. But it is a sort of a self-governing region of the Danish crown. It's so in that, you know, it belongs to Denmark. So what is all this about? I think this is about one of two things, but I would take it seriously that it's difficult to believe that he would use military force, but he certainly might use economic force. Partly this is Donald Trump hitting back at the Europeans. He was doing this when he was in power last time, saying that the European partners in NATO weren't paying enough and that America was having to do too much. This plays into a long-standing rhetoric that Americans have about the two world wars as much as anything, that, you know, you had to wait for us to bail you out, that sort of thing. Second, I think, is also because he has not forgotten the way he feels that he was sort of treated by other European rulers, other European heads of state, heads of government and state and what have you, last time around, some of whom, of course, are still there. He's also, of course, been talking about Canada as well as Panama. And really, I think the message here is basically a larger American sphere, which, of course, would then, for him, would include Greenland, and basically saying, keep off. But it is quite extraordinary, the rhetoric. And I mean, to be absolutely accurate, he's not the first American president to sort of think it would not be a bad idea if Greenland were to be, garrisoned by the Americans.
He's gone a bit further.
But he's gone rather further.
And we can't be totally comforted by the fact that he has a lot of bluster then, you don't think?
Particularly given that, you know, we've got a war going on in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, which we didn't have during his first presidency. So, yeah, these things, I would take the whole issue very seriously.
More Trump features to come in the next few Thursdays, I imagine, as he comes into power. Liz Truss has sort of popped back up in the news today, hasn't she?
Extraordinary.
Bit out of the blue.
Yeah, she's she has sent, no doubt, presumably instructed her solicitors to send a legal letter to Keir Starmer.
Who's probably okay with legal letters.
Yes, I would have thought he's quite used to those as a former public prosecutor. Yeah. But basically threatening him with legal action for saying that she crashed the economy during her short time as premier. I mean, she says it's not true and therefore it's a libel. These are political interpretations. I mean, this is a non-starter as a legal thing. What on earth she thinks she's doing? Heaven only knows. One gathers that number 10 is simply going to ignore it, and I think that's probably the right thing to do. And I have to say, it does say rather more about Liz Truss than it does about him.
Yes, it was an enjoyable little nugget in the news today. And Prince William has been, end on a slightly more lighthearted note. Prince William has been saying happy birthday to his wife, hasn't he?
Yes, with a rather lovely photo, which was taken.
Do we call her, first of all? Should we call her Kate or Catherine or the Princess?
I think
editorially, what would you go for?
I think Catherine is the one that's, you know, the royal family want people to use. Yeah. So fair enough.
Yeah, because all the media just call her Kate, don't they? But we should call her Catherine to be correct.
Well, of course, her 43rd birthday is not one where you normally issue a public photo or anything, because it's not a sort of...
No, I've steered clear of that on my 43rd birthday.
Yes, as I recall, so did I.
Yeah, I mean, maybe on my 50th in a couple of years.
But of course, this is really about this very, very difficult year that they've gone through. Now, difficult year on the basis of personalities and health, and, you know, because obviously she's had cancer and treatment for cancer, so of course has his father, the king. But in terms of the monarchy and its sort of public relations, it's a weird way. I think it's actually helped it. There's been a sort of lot of public sympathy for them. But on a personal level, it's clearly been, as it would be for anyone, when your wife has got cancer, it's been a very difficult journey for them. And he sort of marked it by issuing this rather touching photograph with a message alongside it. Actually, in a funny way, although it's not a milestone birthday, he's turned it into a milestone.
Well, happy birthday to the Princess of Wales, and maybe a bit more Prince William and a bit less Prince Andrew for 2025.
That would be nice.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sean Lagg. Is it too late to say Happy New Year?
Not at all. In fact, I was reading today that this idea that you've got to take the decorations down at the Epiphany or Twelfth Night is a Victorian invention. Christmas itself continues until Candlemas, which is the 2nd of February. So not
you're a purist on these things.
You can carry on with Christmas as well as with New Year.
And I think it's only 50 weeks. It's only 50 weeks today till Christmas. Happy Christmas, Dr. Lang. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. It is Cambridge Radio. We've got your entertainment news coming next in just a moment.